to Deep in Bear Country, a Berenstain Bearcast. I'm your host, Phil Gonzalez, and today we are discussing 1985's The Berenstain Bears Learn About Strangers. Now, this is a bit of a departure for me in that I'm dividing this discussion into two parts, two separate episodes. The first episode, the one you're listening to right now, consists almost entirely of an interview I conducted with Allison Fay, program manager of the Jacob Wetterling Resource Center. The reason I did this is because this interview was so in-depth and so, I felt, important to the subject at hand that I feel it deserves its own space before I go into the second episode, where I just do my usual coverage of the book. So please enjoy the interview I conduct with Allison Fay. And please note also that if you listen to the show with young children, you might want to listen to the interview first before you let your kids listen to it. It's not particularly graphic or anything, but it is very serious and a bit heavy. So you might want to decide how you want to discuss this with your children. It does discuss child abduction and children's physical safety. It doesn't mince words. So know that going in, and then I will catch up with you guys right after the interview.
My name is Allison Fay. I'm the program manager of the Jacob Wetterling Resource Center. We've been around for over 25 years, originally as a Minnesota agency, and now we do work nationally. Prevention of missing children, prevention of sexual abuse. Our goal is for kids to walk around smart and not scared, and that's a big part of what we do. We equip families, communities. We're a program of Gunderson National Child Protection Training Center, so we have a lot of our colleagues working on different initiatives to end child maltreatment.
And what do you do to educate about this topic?
We have a variety of programs. You know, our most popular class is a class for parents called Teachable Safety Skills. It's an hour and a half, and we go through what you need to know about personal safety and internet safety. We have a lot of things that we, you know, brochures and videos and things that people purchase and use in their community. Social media we use to get word out. Media, examples of things like this today. Whatever we can do to get the tools out to families and to children and to those that work with kids about what works and what doesn't work in personal and online safety.
What is one of the biggest misconceptions about personal safety?
We've been trying to eradicate stranger danger since, like, I'd say 1990, and it just doesn't go away. I had a reporter tell me at one point, well, it rhymes. Think of something else that rhymes. And it's like, well, we can tell you what works. This doesn't work, here's why, and here's what works instead. And that idea is, it takes a while to get rid of that. And we're still, even this week, I was working with two different groups that well-intentioned had incorrect messaging that doesn't help keep kids safe around the theme of strangers, and it doesn't work.
Well, speaking of stranger danger and incorrect messaging that doesn't help keep kids safe,
let's talk Berenstain Bears.
Let's talk Berenstain Bears. You said off mic that you were familiar with this book.
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah. So we have, in our office, we have a wide variety of kids' books that are helpful and that aren't helpful. And I don't want to knock the Berenstain Bears because it's, you know, a lot of their stuff I remember when I was a kid being really helpful. But this particular book, it's like a example of what not to do on every page. It's like, oh, no.
And there's an irony in that because since the book is about parents not handling the topic well in the first place, the book is sort of meta in that it also doesn't handle the topic well.
Right.
And what do you think is one of the biggest drawbacks to the way the book handles the message?
Well, I mean, the first page, the little poem that they use, you know, when every small cub, I'm sorry, Bear Country is safe, when every small cub there learns special lessons from Ma and Papa Bear. Even just in that first page, it's putting the responsibility for child safety on the shoulders of a kid. Hmm. And that isn't effective. We can't put personal safety solely on the shoulders of a 7-year-old because it doesn't work. 7-year-olds are easily manipulated, easily tricked, easily confused. And we need to make sure that adults are paying attention to the warning signs and adults are owning this and that adults are knowing about prevention and letting, you know, supporting their kids in that. So even just the very beginning. And the cover, I mean, the look at poor old Sister Bear being scared of all the people she doesn't know. And we know that when kids are in danger, people they don't know are usually the people that are helpful, you know. So just the first two pages. One of the messages in the book, like, is if you're friendly, you're at higher risk. And we know that a lot of kids who are outgoing and kids who feel comfortable having conversations with people, they can make themselves a harder target because they're willing to talk about this stuff.
Right. You know? I was wondering about that because it really paints Sister as behaving incorrectly simply by being outgoing and social.
So just going to the whole, like, stranger piece, we don't teach stranger danger because the number one thing is that kids think that they'll recognize what a stranger looks like. We have an old video and I ask a five-year-old to describe a stranger and Alex says, well, he's coming out of an alley, he's wearing a trench coat, and he hasn't shaved, and he smells really bad. And so in Alex's head, if a man emerges from an alley in a trench coat, he's going to connect it to this message. And what we know is most people who break kid safety rules come across as really nice. And most people who break kid safety rules are people that they know in real life. Even in our abductions, it's almost always someone that the child knows. So it doesn't help to teach kids to be scared of people they don't know, in the sense of, and if something does happen, the good news is most people are not wanting to hurt kids statistically. So if someone does break your safety rules and you reach out to any other adult, your likelihood of the person you reach out to being able to help you is strong. And kids are really literal. You know, we have kids, we had a case of a young man who was on the autism spectrum who had been taught this whole don't talk to strangers, and he got separated on a wilderness hike and the searchers were yelling his name and he just kept running further and further into the woods because he thought, you know, this was his rule. And so kids are very literal, and we want to give them the tools that help. And sadly, this book is not the tool that helps.
Well, so this book came out in 1985, mm-hmm. which I was a kid in 1985.
As was I.
And it was the kind of the, in my mind at least, pop culturally, the peak of stranger danger. We kind of as a society had decided that there was nothing more dangerous for children than being abducted by a stranger. There were TV movies about it. You were hearing news reports constantly about children getting abducted or missing children. We were all taught, you know, like, not if you see something, say nothing, I guess, was kind of the idea. Like, don't just avoid, like, the message was very mixed, what we were supposed to be learning. If you have any insight into why in the 1980s this became such a panic.
1980s was the birth of the missing child movement. We had the Atlanta child murders in the late 70s of all the young men and women in Atlanta who were killed by the same person they perceived to be. We had Eitan Peets, who went missing walking to the school bus. And it was one of the first high-profile cases because his dad was a photographer. So they had really high-quality, clear photos of Eitan that they were able to put everywhere and on posters, and people could see their face. And then Adam Walsh was the third case in that period of time where he's playing at a store and a 18-year-old, 17-year-old security guard kicks him out of the store and he's outside by himself as a little kid and is, you know, picked up, perceived to be by Otis Toole. But so we had these three cases in a row that became, okay, now we need legislation on missing children. Now we need to study how big the problem is. Now we need resources for families. Before the 1980s, if someone went missing, and we had cases, you know, if someone went missing in the 70s, the only people who would know that they were missing was that police department where they were from. There wasn't any ability for, you know, Plymouth, Minnesota to get information out to Bowabic, Minnesota about who was missing. There was no NCIC ability to share information. So the missing child movement and rules that required police to take reports about missing children, the National Center being formed, all that stuff happened in the 1980s following these three high-profile cases.
And how did stranger danger come out of this?
Well, it's one of those things, you know, I don't know who said it, and I think it was a news editor somewhere, but like, if dog bites man, it's not news. But if man bites dog, it is news. And we know almost all of our cases of missing kids are by people that they know. We know in almost all cases of sexual abuse, the offender is a known person. And it's that small percentage of cases where they're an unknown offender or they haven't met the person that those tend to be and often some of the more the ones that get more attention because they are so rare. You know, we have on average in America about 115 stereotypical kidnappings a year. And so for those 115 families, that's way too many. But that sense of kidnappings happening everywhere you turn is not realistic.
Right, but because it's all we hear about, it paints a picture of that being.
There aren't many stories about, you know, the uncle who sexually abuses a child and then, you know, takes right. the child, because sadly some of those things are far more common. But when we do safety messages, we want to make sure that all of our safety message covers all type, you know, like, for example, we just say you check first the person taking care of you before you get in a car with anyone. The child doesn't have to worry, is this someone that they know, is this someone they don't know? And then you follow it up with what ifs to make sure they get it. What if the neighbor drove up and asked you to get in their car for ice cream? Well, I'd come check first with you before I got in their car. Great. What if someone you didn't know drove up and asked you to get in their car for ice cream? I'd back away, check first with you before I get in a car with anyone. Great. What if it was grandma who drove up and asked to get ice cream? Well, I have to first check in with you. So that the kid doesn't worry about how they know the person. They just worry about, this is our family safety rule. I check in before I get in a car with anyone. And so we want to make it easy for kids, but we don't want them to be scared of people that they don't know is the only, you know, because... The kids are the best teachers. You know, I was doing a workshop with Girl Scouts, and I gave them a what-if scenario to go and, you know, I don't remember exactly what it was. It was something like, what if someone on the internet asked you to take a picture of yourself that you knew was inappropriate and they kept pressuring you to send it? What would you do? So I put them in small groups to go discuss. And one of the Girl Scouts raised her hand. She said, Allison, do I like this person who's asking me for the picture? And I said, well, what does that matter? Like, tell me more about that. Why is that important? She's like, well, I really have a hard time saying no to people I like. But if someone I don't like, this will be really easy. And that's that whole piece of, like, you know, the kids don't see the people on the internet as strangers. They see them as people who they check in with, and how's your dog and what's happening in your town and whatever else. So we want to take the pressure off the do we know them or not and focus on how do they make you feel in your gut and what are they asking you to do, no matter how you know them.
Yeah, no matter who they are.
You're right.
Well, Papa paints a pretty vivid picture for Sister in this
sister.
Book. Pulls out the newspaper, and apparently all that's happening in Bear Country is children are getting abducted by strangers, because there's two pages kids getting abducted.
And then her nightmares.
And then he tells her a horrifying story, which seems to simply be about a goose getting murdered. And she has nightmares about it. The next day she wakes up and she's terrified of strangers, which in her mind is everybody at this point, because... it's undefined, like, what even is a stranger? And then Mama doesn't help by saying, not all people are bad. Look at this bumpy apple. It's fine on the inside. But some people are bad. Look at this fine apple. It's disgusting on the inside. Which, to me, doesn't actually teach anything either. It simply means you have no idea what's going on inside anybody's head at any given moment. And then at the end of the book, Brother Bear almost gets in a car with a stranger.
Yeah.
And Sister Bear rats him out. And I'm not sure what the lesson the book is trying to teach.
So many layers.
Is. It seems to be coming at it from five different confused angles. Like, I wouldn't, as a parent, I don't even know. Like, as a parent, I have two kids, a 14-year-old and a 5-year-old. So we've been through this book for generations. And I've yet to be able to figure out what I'm supposed to take away from this as a parent. Except, just don't talk to anybody. It's just dangerous out there. It's a dangerous world out there. If you, as a professional, could rewrite this story, how would you teach this lesson to Sister Bear, or a better lesson to Sister Bear?
I think there's this false mentality amongst parents that scared kids are safer kids. And that's not true. When kids are scared, when something happens, they freeze up. Often, you know, our bodies fight, flight, or freeze. And if kids are scared, and they freeze. But if we've talked them through what ifs and gone back and forth and had these conversations, then they're moved to act, right? And so I think a big piece of any time we talk prevention with kids is to make sure it's not a one-way discussion, that it's back and forth. You know, what if? And the two rules that we always say is, you know, anyone who gives you that gut feeling or that mixing bowl in your tummy feeling or that uh-oh feeling, we call it different things at different ages. But when someone is making you feel squeamish on the inside, pay attention to that feeling, because it's trying to keep you safe, and move away from that person and check in with one of your five adults. And then we also followed up with any person who's trying to get you to break a safety rule, move away from that person and go check in with your five adults. And we say five adults because sometimes it's the person on that list who's asking them to break a rule, who may not know the family safety rules or maybe just pushing against family safety rules because they've worked their way into the net, right? And sometimes the person on that net doesn't know how to help. And so we want to make sure that kids have the safety net. But most of our offenders are looking for kids without a net. So I think the big piece is to make sure that they're surrounded by healthy adults, that there are people that they can talk to, and that these conversations start young and continue to go on. I mean, the most victimized segment of the population of the United States is 12 to 17-year-olds. Is there anyone in the podcast who would want to relive junior high for fun? You know? And we think about, well, what, you know, why 12 to 17? And there's like 40 reasons why 12 to 17. You know, the risk-taking behavior, the brains aren't done yet, the hormones, the wanting to be a grown-up and not, you know, and all the different things that... But if we can start when they're young to talk prevention and do what-ifs and check in and talk to us, to them about their gut and teach them about their bodies and talk to them about touches and things like that, we can't expect the kids to start the conversation.
Right.
You know, I was at a junior high recently and I said, well, how many of you already had the personal safety chat with their parents? One boy raised his hand. He said, oh, my parents don't know anything about sex. I was like, whoa, you're 10 steps ahead of me and on a different topic. You know, I'm talking personal safety. You've jumped, but I bet they do. I bet they do know something about sex. It's just a guess, right? And he's like, well, they've never brought it up, so I assume they don't know anything about it. So I get my information from kids on the bus. I remember the kids on my bus. That's not a good source of personal safety or healthy sex ed, you know, as a resource from the kids on the school bus. That's
yeah, and
not...
note to our younger listeners, the kids on the bus, 99% of the time, they're lying to you about everything.
Right, and it's, I mean, they've been everywhere, they've done everything, and then you're like, wait, maybe not. And, you know, we're doing internet safety for 13 to 17-year-olds or that age. We talk about the person who wants to talk to you in a chat room about these questions, about your body, at 4 p.m. is not the person you get that advice from, right? Like, and so... That idea in this book about you can't tell someone's intentions by looking at them, you know, the apple analogy. You can't tell someone's intentions by what they look like. Kids feel like they can pick out someone who's bad or someone who has bad intentions by looking at them. And we know nice is a strategy. And a lot of offenders come across as really nice. So it's not about, we don't want to put any attention on how we know them. We want to focus on, do they break your rules? But in order for kids to know that, they have to have rules. They have to have family safety rules. They can be like, oh, our family safety rule is I don't keep secrets from the person who takes care of me. And this person's asking me to keep a secret. That's a family safety rule. So we have to have that standard so that they know what their red flags are. And then just what if all over the place. Because we want, you know, some of our kids, when kids are abused or when they are hurt, what we'll hear a lot from kids is, oh, I screwed up. I didn't do it right. I'm supposed to run. I'm supposed to kick. I'm supposed to yell. And I froze because this is someone I like. Or I froze because I didn't know, you know. And even if our bodies freeze, we still, no one has a right to hurt a kid. And you still have the right to tell somebody. You still have the right to get help. Even if you don't scream no, you still have the right to have people help you. And this this book, I would have liked it to be better. The one thing that works in this book is that the kids talk to their parents when they're freaked out. That's good. Let's build on that.
Yeah.
Right? So when instead of reading a horrible book about a goose being eaten or whatever else, say, oh, I see that, you know, I showed you some really scary stories in the newspaper today. Let's talk about that. You know, how does that, you know, yeah, it's really scary that there are people out there that make choices that hurt kids. But the good news is so many more grown-ups want to help kids. So if someone is doing something that hurts you, let's find someone who can help you. And, you know, to reinforce some of the non-nightmarish messages, because it's not scared kids that are safe. It's smart kids that are safer kids.
And then at the very end of the book, it gives 6 rules for cubs.
I think I drew a lot of frowny faces by the rules.
The first one being never talk to a stranger.
Here's the deal. If a child is being mistreated or being abused, the people who can help them are often people they don't know. From the social worker to the forensic interviewer to law enforcement, if they've been taught never to talk to people they don't know. You know, even just something innocuous, a child's at Valley Fair and they get separated from their parent. If they stand there frozen and freaked out and don't talk to anybody, the person who approaches them might not be a safe person, right? Or might be a person with bad intentions. But if they've been taught, oh, my dad went wandering off. Why does dad always go wandering off in public? You know, that's how they see it. It's like, come on, we were right here. And if they approach, say, a mom with kids and say, hey, my dad was right here. We got separated. Here's his cell phone number. It's written on the back of my hand. Can you just call him and tell him that you'll wait with me till he comes back and gets me? The child's in a much safer place, the one who's standing there frozen. So we want to teach kids how to talk to strangers. Gavin DeBecker has a great book called Protecting the Gift that sort of does a lot of what-ifs on those scenarios. But kids who do talk to people they don't know when they need help are in a much better place than the one that is standing there frozen.
That makes a lot of sense. Never take candy or other gifts from a stranger.
We say that we check first with the person taking care of us before we take candy or gifts from anyone. You know, because if it's, say, a relative at the family reunion who says, don't tell your parents I'm giving you all this chocolate before bed, right? If that person means well and the kid takes a couple steps away from them and says, oh, I'm sorry, I got to check first before I accept presents. It's just one of our family safety rules. And they run to check. If the person means well, they're going to get it. If the person doesn't mean well and that person takes a couple steps back and says, oh, I'm sorry, that's a family safety rule. We have to check first before we get presents. That person knows this is a hard target. So either way, it works. And so again, we don't have to worry about the how we know the person. We pay attention to what they're asking us to do. And if they're asking us to accept the secret gift, we should check first.
Never go anywhere with a stranger?
We check first with the person taking care of us before we go anywhere with anyone. In more than half of our abductions, the child's abducted by someone they know. And so, you know, if anyone is trying to get you to go somewhere with them without letting you check first, we teach kids that they're more important than their stuff. So leave your stuff behind. Like, if a kid only hears, don't lose your backpack, don't lose your backpack, don't lose your backpack, and someone's grabbing at their backpack, trying to get them to go with them, doesn't matter if I know this person or not. They're trying to make me go somewhere without checking first. I'm leaving my backpack. I'm making a lot of noise. We teach kids that their voice is one of their best prevention pieces. And we teach kids to not scream, but to yell. Because if you've ever been in a shopping center and you heard a child screaming, did you run to the scream? You're like, oh, dear, it's nap time, and sorry about aisle 3. I'm staying way over here in aisle 9, and peace be with you over here in 9. You know, you're creating your space from the scream. You don't want to go near that. But if we hear kids yelling, like from their gut, where they're feeling scared, call 911, or I need a grown-up to help me, then adults run to that. If you're in a shopping center and you heard a kid yelling from their gut, call 911. You are going to see what is going on. And so we teach them to move away from the person, ask them to go somewhere with them, make a lot of noise, leave any stuff behind, and then you can latch on to an adult who isn't asking you to go somewhere with them. Because if, you know, bystander science says the more people watching a crime being committed, the less likely someone helps, because everyone's thinking someone else is going to help. So when you learn CPR, you know, you point at someone and say, you call 911, and you give them that job. So with older kids, they can point and make eye contact with someone and say, this person's trying to make me go somewhere with them. Can you please call for help? And make eye contact with little ones. They can just grab on the leg of someone who isn't trying to make them go somewhere with them. Because I don't know if you've ever tried to pry a child off of something. Much harder than, you know, and most grown-ups would never abduct or abuse a kid. So if someone's trying to abduct or abuse you or make you break your safety rules, you seek out any grown-up at random, your odds of that person being able to help you are high. Yeah. So even to latch on to someone who isn't trying to get you to go somewhere with them, offenders are looking for easy targets. And so just by yelling and moving quickly away from them and finding a grown-up, we're in a much better position. But the good news is, and the first part isn't good news, in the 1980s, before the big missing children movement happened, we're at a 60% recovery rate as a country for finding missing kids. And now we're at a 97.5% recovery rate for finding missing kids. So, yes, there are abductions. Yes, there's abuse. But law enforcement does a much better job, much better training at knowing, you know, what to look for. And the resources like the National Center, resources like local advocacy centers, resources like ours and other nonprofits. And we're in a much – and the internet. I mean, sadly, it's a big part of many of our cases is how kids are lured away online because they're lured by attention and affection. But it also gets word out really quick. And the Amber Alert, you know, we've used the Amber Alert 30 times in Minnesota since we've had it in 2002. And all 30 kids have been recovered alive. We haven't lost one child we've used it for in Minnesota. So when people do break kids' safety rules and they are taken, much better response times, much better training. These cases go to the top of the list. But the goal is that it never happens in the first place and that adults own this problem. That was a really long answer.
That's great, though.
Sorry.
It's like, don't keep secrets from your parents, especially if someone asks you to.
That was my one smiley face out of all the frowny faces. But I learned from kids. I used to say there's never a good reason to keep a secret from your parents. If anyone asks you to keep a secret, go tell them right away. I was training kids. This little guy raised his hand. He said, my mom's turning 40 next week, and they're planning a party with, like, cake and relatives. I'm not supposed to say anything till next week. Is my family all asking me to break safety rules? And I was like, oh, can imagine kids going home and be like, remember when we used to have holidays before we met Allison? Now we all know what we're getting each other for everything. You know, so we teach kids the difference between secrets and surprises.
Mm.
Surprises are things that everyone's going to find out about, and we're really happy and we're excited and it's great. Secrets are anything else. Yeah. And if we're not sure, ask one of our five adults who the secret is not about and to find out if it's a surprise or if it's not.
Your body is your own personal property, etc. Especially the private parts talks about a doctor being in the body business and having to examine you from time to time.
We talk about clean and healthy touches. You know, all families should feel comfortable talking about touches. Talk about touches that make you feel good. Talk about touches you're not sure about. We don't teach bad touch, good touch, because child psychologists have told us that most touch feels good, and so that's confusing. And then the other layer to that is kids who've been touched in a bad way feel like they have to keep it a secret because they've been bad. So let's not have the kid try to figure out if this is good or bad or whatever. We just talk about touches, and we talk about the fact that no one has the right to touch or look at your private parts or have you touch or look at their private parts unless they're keeping you clean and healthy. And if it's clean and healthy, like in a doctor's office, you can talk about it the whole time. You can ask questions about it because we talk about touches. There's no such thing as a secret touch. And so kids should know, please, the real names for their body parts. Just like they know their elbow and their toe, they should know what their penis is, their vulva, their vagina, their buttocks. Like, because kids who have the words for it are much more equipped to get help. And we've seen kids who've been taught euphemisms and they seek out somebody else. And they're like, this older kid on the playground is touching my purse. And the teacher has no idea that she uses the word purse to talk about her private parts, right? So giving kids the vocabulary so there's no shame, no embarrassment, and they know that they can seek out help if someone's trying to break their body safety rules.
And finally, use common sense. We can't have rules for everything. Common sense is what keeps us safe by telling us what to do in situations that are not covered by rules.
I would change common sense to listen to your gut feeling. Our gut is the number one body part that keeps us safe. If someone is making your gut instinct go off and creating that mixing bowl in your stomach, move away from that person and check in. Because there's a reason that our body does that when something is going wrong and someone's asking us to do something. And the older we get, the more we use logic to contradict our gut. So the more we can encourage kids to let their gut lead, the better position that we're in. Because their gut is a pretty good judge about people's intentions.
Right, and common sense to me just sounds very judgy. Like, why aren't you using common sense?
You got, and again, it puts the responsibility on the kid. And what we say is it's a kid's job to be a kid, and it's the grown-up's job to keep them safe. So what we can do is we can equip our children with the words and the invitation to come and talk to us and to give them good information, but we also don't want to have them shoulder all the responsibility. If someone does break their safety rules, it's never, ever, 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 ever the kid's fault.
Well, Allison, thank you so much for meeting with me today.
And hopefully, I know the other books will not have as painful of a discussion around this is wrong and this is, and it's well-meaning. I mean, I look at it and I'm like, this was well-meaning, but it's good if you're ever writing about personal safety to check in with someone who does personal safety to make sure it matches up with what we know works. Because there are a lot of well-intentioned people pushing a lot of fear-based messages out there. And personal safety shouldn't be scary. It should be proactive and positive.
Now, you said you've written a book?
I did. I wrote the I Can Play It Safe book, just with safety rules that kids should know. And then I wrote the On Those Runaway Days book about what to do on days you wish you could run away from home.
And where are these books available?
You can get them at freespirit.com or amazon.com or anything like that.
Wonderful. Yeah. And do you have like a list of resources for parents that they can look up online?
If you go to jwrc.org, Jacob Wetterling Resource Center.org, we have information on how to have a family safety night. We have the How You Talk About Touches brochures. We have the Empower Me Family Safety Rules for elementary school kids. We have the Be Empowered Rules for junior high and high school kids. internet safety information, and then a list of recommended reading of books for kids at different ages that aren't scary and that have good safety messages.
Wonderful. I'll put a link to that in the show notes. So thank you again for meeting. This was the first interview I've ever done where I've had to fight back tears while listening to it because it's so like...
I'm sorry.
No. It's a very important topic. It's why I wanted to make sure and treated it with the seriousness that it deserves, moving above and beyond our 1985 mentality and into the modern age. We know more about kids. We understand more. We've had time to actually think about how best to teach kids.
Well, and in this book, I mean, we see that it doesn't work. It just scares poor sister to death. And Brother Bear, the one who's shy and scared of people that he doesn't know, when someone has something that he's interested in, he's right there. So, I mean, it shows us, like, this isn't working so well. So
he doesn't actually know how to say no.
Right. And so teaching kids that no is a complete sentence and they have a right to say no to anyone trying to get them to do something against their safety rules or against their body rules, whatever they say no, check in with the person taking care of them, because it's not their job as a kid to figure out long-term safety planning. It's their job to say, this person's asking me to break my rules. Here's the rule. And the parent takes it from there. And if any parents ever need resources on what to do when they have to take it on, give us a call, 1-800-325-HOPE. We have advocates available 24/7 to help parents out.
That was Allison Fay, program manager of the Jacob Wetterling Resource Center. I want to thank her once again for appearing on the show. Again, I am going to do my regular book discussion in the next episode, which, you know, I'm going to release at the same time as this. So jump on over to that one if you want to hear me talk about Bear Country a little bit more, about why I chose to conduct the episodes this way and why I think that this book has an unusual place in Berenstain Bear book history. If you want to find us on iTunes and rate and review us, go ahead and do that, please. You can also find us on Facebook at BerensteinBearcast.wordpress.com, or you can write to me at BerensteinBearcast@gmail.com. Again, stay tuned and listen to the next episode, and you'll get to hear me yammer on about the Berenstain Bears. I will see you in that episode. Bye.